Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 300 speaker files, links for you to subscribe to the podcast, and a place where you can donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Charlotte.
Hi, my name's Charlotte, and I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic. I'm a little bit nervous, but I'll subside. I want to thank Monica for inviting me to share with you tonight my experience, strength, and hope. Whew, I'm just going to take a deep breath. All right, so tonight my job is to share with you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. I want to welcome the newcomer. This is my first OA meeting, and Martha here? Martha was my Eskimo. She brought me here, and I, too, am part of other fellowships, and I had no idea what OA was like, and I was a newcomer for a long time, so I really want to extend my deepest welcome to those that raise their hand, because I know what it's like to be new and new for a long time, and just the devastation of this disease. And I want to welcome those that didn't raise their hand, that are lying to themselves or lying to a sponsor about abstinence, because I did that, and I know what that's like. So I'll get started. My abstinence date is April 9th, 2012, and I have a sponsor, and I have an active relationship with my sponsor. I go to meetings, and what I mean by an active relationship is I call my sponsor every day. I go to meetings, and I take commitments, and I have a bottom line, and what that means is I don't throw up or take, I don't throw up, and I don't purge in any way, no matter what. So I don't take laxatives, I don't take colonics, and I don't throw up. So that's my bottom line. And it's a black and white for me, because if it's not, I lied about that for a long time. So anyways, I was born on the East Coast to two loving parents, and I don't know, they may have eating disorders, but that's not really my business. And I moved to San Francisco when I was 6 months old, and so I don't really remember the East Coast, but I had a strange relationship with food from the get-go. Like, my parents told me, they called me juicy legs from the very beginning, because I had fat legs, and I don't know. That's just a funny thing to remember. Actually, my wet nurse called me juicy legs, and it kind of stuck. And my first word was juice, but I only ate, bread and pasta for, my first 6 years of life. And I remember my parents always just say, "Can't you just eat normally?" And I didn't even know what that meant. But it was like, as a kid, I had no idea. It was like, eat normally. It was like, that's what I liked. And then as I grew up, it was like, can't you just be normal? And it was like, I had no experience with what normal was. This is just what I did. And I started to take offense to, can't you just be normal? And so, I don't know, but that was their reaction to the way that I ate and the way that I acted. When I was 11, I sort of made enemies with myself. I started to restrict my food, and it was like I became my own worst enemy, and it was when self-will started to work for me, and I started eating very little, and anorexia is part of my story. I don't identify as an anorexic, but it was like apples and yogurt, and I think the self-will was really backed with a lot of self-hatred, and it was sort of this recipe for getting thin, and it worked for a really long time. And my home life was, let me give you a little backdrop for my home life. My parents had gotten divorced, and I was living with my mom, and I had a lot of potential, would I say. I was a really good student, and my dad really wasn't part of my life, and I really wanted to succeed, and being thin was sort of part of this recipe for success in my life. And like I said, self-will worked for me, and so I read a lot of like 17 and all these magazines, and if I could just like will myself to look like them, everything, like all the pieces would line up. It was like good grades, being thin, looking like these people, and getting a good boyfriend. Everything was perfect in my life. It was like, so I did that, and it worked, and I got a lot of praise for being thin and pretty. And my mom, you know, I don't think that, you know, my parents caused my eating disorder or any of my isms, but I really think that a mother figure has a lot of influence on a daughter and on any children. And she always, I always remember her saying things like, oh, if I could, she's a Southern woman, these last 10 pounds, you know, and she's always on a diet and always exercising, and hearing those things as a young child has influence. And so I don't blame her today, but it became part of my way of living, I guess. And so I learned, like, I remember going to camp one summer, and I felt like the ugly girl. It was like I had sort of a thick waist, and I wore glasses, and the boy that I liked didn't like me. And so I made it up in my head that if I could only, like, hearing my mom and reading these magazines, it was like, I wrote this story in my head that if I just lost the weight, then this boy would like me. It was like linear. And so I lost weight, and I would do things like I would make the carpool drop me off 10 blocks from my house so I could walk home, and then I would swim 40 laps at the pool, and I would do these crazy things and then eat only apples and yogurt, and I lost the weight, and then I got the boyfriend the next year at camp. And so this made sense, that being thin equaled, then I got what I wanted. And I also got a lot of praise at home for, Char is watching what she eats. And this is when I was 11 years old. And I got a lot of praise from my mom. And so I thought this was the answer. And so that was sort of my like prepubescent experience with my eating disorder. Fast forward, I went away to a boarding school on the East Coast. So I'm a California girl, and this was, and boarding school was a great opportunity for better education. It wasn't because I was bad. It wasn't military. It was sort of a family tradition. And, you know, my eating disorder, I just want to paint a picture for you, just took on different, it shape-shifted. And at boarding school, I learned how to throw up. And it just, like, it's a miracle that I'm standing here tonight. And I think I'm nervous because I haven't spoken in front of this many people. And it's just, I mean, I don't know what I'm saying. But basically, I started throwing up. I couldn't. It just changed. And at boarding school, what happened is there's communal bathrooms. And what I would do is I lived off of, like, frozen yogurt and garbanzo beans and ketchup, like really weird stuff. And what I would do is I had to throw up in my room. And I would throw up in garbage bags in my room and hide them. And, like, that is one of the lowest things that I ever did. But I had to do what I had to do. And so I fast forward, and really the solution that I found in my early, like, teenage years to my eating disorder was drugs and alcohol. And I really thought I had found the solution. Like, I started using drugs and alcohol, and I thought, This is a miracle. It's gone. Like, I stopped throwing up. I lost a bunch of weight. And what happened for me was this, like, cycle, this years upon years of using and then getting sober and my bulimia coming back with a vengeance. And I couldn't figure it out. And like I would go into rehabs and I had not thrown up for years. And then I would find myself in the shower, you know, for an hour. And I would get put on stuff in rehabs like first floor restriction. And while all the other people were, you know, going up to their rooms and just sort of like embarrassing things. You know, things like that. And I started using laxatives in mass quantities, and throwing up. And as I graduated or moved more through high school, I was throwing up multiple times a day and starting to eat more quantities of food. And it was taking over my life. I was throwing up multiple times a day and taking handfuls of laxatives, and it was terrible. And so what happened for me is I moved to LA to get sober, and I think a lot of people maybe come into both programs, and I got sober. And again, my eating disorder like took a shift. I stopped being able to throw up, and I just started binging, and it was like these feelings that were coming up when I got sober were so overwhelming that I couldn't be present in my own body, and I was just eating in mass quantities, and I just didn't even care anymore about my body or what I looked like. And when I was younger, it was so important to me, like, what I looked like, and I spent so much time trying to look a certain way, and it changed. Like, when I was in my early 20s and when I had gotten sober, that didn't matter anymore. I just didn't want to feel. I just wanted to numb out completely. And when I got sober, a lot of night eating happened, and I gained a lot of weight. And I was just sort of this ghost. I wore really heavy clothes. I wore black all the time. I still wear a lot of black. It's something I haven't really let go of. I think it's just another layer that will probably fall away. That's what I've realized, is that this is just a lot about being patient and it working slowly. So I got sober in 2008, and Martha introduced me to program, I think, in 2009, and I didn't stay. And what really had to happen for me is desperation that I didn't know, and I couldn't stop eating, and I couldn't stop throwing up, and I was just really desperate, and I didn't think that I would be able to stay sober. So I crawled into the last time I weighed myself was 157 pounds, and wearing all black, bloated, really, really depressed. And I don't even think I realized I was that depressed, because I was just so checked out. I was living in Venice, and I would kind of hit these like this like triangle of a block, and I didn't care how much money I was spending. My life was so small. I had no friends. I was eating, going to work, and sleeping as much as I could. And I called into the I think it was like a 7:30 morning meeting, and I was just desperate. I was like barely alive, and I just started going to meetings, and Martha started sponsoring me, and I was lying about my abstinence, and I stopped purging, but I was spending mass quantities of money on colonics, at least two a week, and I was taking herbal laxatives, and it was the best that I could do. I just didn't trust that I could give up what I was dependent on for my entire life. Like, I just had to, I couldn't give it up. And what happened was, it was April. I broke up with this guy just disappeared. I thought he was the one. Like, I was so in love with this guy, and I totally scared him off. Like, I was like, you're the one. And, I was calling him, making all the, like, doing, like, calling him all the time, making all the plans, like, can we hang out, can we hang out? And he disappeared. Oh, is it not on?
I don't know.
Yeah, oh,
maybe just a little closer. So it's hard to.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
That's much better.
Like this?
Yeah, much better.
Oh, you can hear me.
Oh.
So, he disappeared, and can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. He disappeared, and I went to a Monday morning OA meeting at the cottage, and I was devastated, and I was bawling, and my current sponsor was there, and she just, like, embraced me in a way that was so kind and loving and just what I needed. And it's like that window of opportunity, I think, that a lot of us we're all given here, that is like the seconds and inches, you know, that we need to, and it's just this beautiful opportunity that we can walk through. And I was lying to myself, you know, and I told her that I was using laxatives. And she said, and there's another speaker that talks about, you know, being in program for a long time and using laxatives and claiming abstinence. And I couldn't stand her. Like, because she was telling my truth, but I knew that I needed to say something. So I told Vivian and my sponsor, and she said, "Well, do you think you could just not do that today?" And I had no idea how I could just do it for that day. And at that time, it wasn't about the weight. I had lost like 20, 25 pounds, so it wasn't about the weight. It wasn't about the food. It was just about this dependence, and I wasn't depending upon a God or on my fellows. And I said yes, and I did it, and I don't know how, and I love it, this saying that said, God's grace is available to all of us, and it's so, so true. And so from that day to this, I haven't thrown up, taken a laxative, had a colonic, and I haven't eaten perfectly, had a perfect meal plan, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I know that that's because I've, you know, been consistent with my meetings and been consistent with my relationship with my sponsor and worked the steps, and haven't gotten crazy about how I should look or what I should eat. And that's what works for me. So what my life is like today is, I shared at a meeting earlier today, is that my relationship with God has gotten a little askew. And that's hard to admit, because I really want to say that I have a great relationship with God. And what happens is, I just don't believe that He can help me with everything. And I'm so glad that I am speaking tonight, because I realize, like, what a miracle it is to be somebody that used to throw up in garbage bags, you know, and hide them and smell the whole dorm and, like, deny it. And so, like, this is perfect for me. I've only spoken for 15 minutes. So in the beginning, it was really hard for me to not binge, and it was told to me that it would be lifted slowly, and that's really what has happened. And what that looks like is, I binged once a week, and then it was once every 2 weeks, and it was nothing of my doing, and I just had to start building a life that I wanted to participate in more than sleep more and not be, you know, basically in my bed or comatose. and it's happened really slowly. And today, it's like a thought, like, oh, I'd rather eat. And then I think about it, and I have like 2 or 3 seconds to think about it and maybe talk to a higher power, and I'd rather participate in my life. And that is not, that could not have happened in my first 2 or 3 or 6 months. I didn't even have a choice. And so it's just been a really slow process. And I wish that maybe I don't even wish, that's just what had to happen for me. And so that's about the binging. And today, I love what Seth said, that it's not about the food, because it's really about like the overwhelming feelings that I have facing like what I think I want or what I think I should have. And and then when I get into fear, then I start to want to control my body. Or I think I should be exercising more, or I think I should be, blah, 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 blah. So, anyways, I don't know. I think I'll probably just open it up to questions, and, that's it. So thank you so much. The question is, how did I overcome the self-hatred? And what tools did I use to get through it? That's a really good question. I think as I grew older, it sort of it dissipated a lot. And I think that as I've been in program, I think just time here has healed a lot of that. And I see how just counterproductive it is for me to be like a whole, healthy, free human being, that those old tapes aren't useful or productive or part of the person that I want to emanate to the world. And, does that make sense? The loving person that I want to be, or the way that I want to talk to myself or talk to others, there's just not really a place for that. And I guess an example of that would be, oh, you're so stupid, or you're so fat. And I don't even go there. I don't go there anymore. And I think that it's really just disappeared over time. And I talk to a God, and not, I don't use self-hatred talk anymore. So, does that make sense? Yeah. So, the question was, how has my relationship with my mother evolved or played out since I've been in program? My mom is not in program, and it's been painful, and, to watch her disease get worse. And her solution is just to exercise more, or not eat this, or as mine would be if I didn't have a program. And so my job is to not, and I'm in another program for relationships. I feel like my main job is to not tell her she's doing something wrong, and to hold my tongue, and to just really have compassion for the pain that she must be in. Just a small circle of, that small circle of solution that she must be in. And with that, I call her, maybe once a week, and she doesn't live in LA, she lives up north still. And, I actually had a really beautiful experience with her. She was down here, and I just felt pure love for her. No judgment or disdain or why aren't you doing it my way. And I feel that is a total gift of this program. But not living in the same city as her, and not being enmeshed, is really important. So that's, I'm saying, really close to my programs. So that's it. the question was, can I talk about my daily spiritual practice? Sure. So before, when I wake up, before I check a phone, a computer, before I get out of bed, anything, I check in with a god, goddess, HP, and I just make sure that I feel in my heart that I'm connected. And I don't say any set of prayers, but the most important thing is that I feel a connection in my being. And I ask for guidance. And it's simple. It's like 2, 5 seconds. And at night, I do the same thing. And I have this really great neck pillow, and so I'm comfortable. And ask for guidance, and then at night I say thank you. And there's just like a running dialogue throughout my day, sometimes more, sometimes less. I don't have a rituals. I don't have anything like that. But those two things in the beginning, before anything, and at night after everything. Yeah, oh, that's something I wanted to talk about. Thank you for bringing that up. So the question was, how do I work through resentment in a day-to-day basis? So when I was speaking, I brought up that self-will, when it was working for me, was really charged with self-hatred. And as I've gotten abstinent and sober, anger has really been something that has popped up. And you know, as a bulimic, I think that I stuffed that down really well. And especially in intimate relationships, anger has been it's just fully blown me away. It's like I thought I was so sweet and kind and innocent. And do not be fooled. So, the 10 steps are huge, and I usually wait till I have about 5 of them until I'm just seething. And resentment, so 10 steps are huge. They are incredibly helpful for me, and I feel like it is like taking a pill or eating a piece of cake. It is so helpful for me to write it down it's just like medicine. And daily resentments, my first sponsor said there's this bless and release program. So if I'm just going to bless them and release them. So like if someone cuts you off, that's like a quickie. That's like before you get to a 10-step area, someone cuts you off, just do a little prayer, bless and release. And I guess that's what, that works for me on like a second-to-second basis. So, yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
Thank you.
How has the program affected my relationship with my work? I'm a student, so I guess I can answer it in terms of being a student. Well, it's positively affected it because I'm more present and I am not thinking about food all the time or thinking about my body all the time. I'm not thinking about the way that I look or thinking about what you're thinking about me or thinking about what I'm going to eat or always going to the refrigerator. I'm more focused. I'm able to achieve the goals that I set, and not just the goal of today, but a long-term goal. So really in a very positive way. I'm able to think about you and not just me, and so in a very, very positive way. How has the program or affected my dating? It has affected it in a positive way. I'm in a relationship, and I think that I'll answer it this way, that working the steps, and especially the 9th step, has affected dating in a very positive way. I think that, how do I want to put this? In terms of like, my eating disorder. You know, I always thought that I had to look a perfect way for you to, in order for you to like me, and that it was always about my outsides and not my insides. And I think that that is, I know that that has totally changed, and that it's a whole package deal, and that the outsides are just, you know, a reflection of the insides. And you know, once I think I internalized that, then I was able to accept that about another person. And I always, you know, looked for a relationship based on what somebody else looked like and on the outsides and not on the insides. So as for saying that, I think that's also maturity too, like growing up. And in terms of the ninth step, I went back through the steps and I did a thorough sexual inventory. And I had a sponsor that said, you don't owe any amends to these men, because in the best amends you can make is to stay the hell away from them. And I was like, awesome. That is easy. And, you know, and that's probably what I needed to do for my first while, because I would have gotten it all confused and all wrong. And I would have thought, I look good, or, you know, I would have, you know, done it a totally, not in a humble way. And, but so what happened is that I did a thorough sexual amends, or thorough sexual inventory, and there were a lot of people that I really hurt, and I made amends to those people. And after I did that, like, God put somebody in my life that, like, I'm totally compatible with, and we have a beautiful relationship. And so, and as for like how I feel in the relationship and with my body, is I'm confident and I feel good, and it's a loving relationship. So, yeah. So, that's a great question. The question is, how did I become willing to become totally honest? I think there was that window that I was given. It was like I was just lying my whole life, and this was the last thread, like the. You know, I had just, there were years and years and years where I had just lied and lied and lied and lied through my teeth. And it was like, who was I kidding? This is my life. And, no one else is being hurt by my lies except for me. And, I think I just really had an experience with that, like a deep experience with that. And someone asked me, and Vivian, she had asked me, like, right then, well, are you, I don't know how it actually went, to tell you the truth, if she asked me if I was taking anything, or I think she asked me if I was abstinent, and I said no. So I think I was given an opportunity, and I was also given the grace, I guess. So, yeah. Thank you.